Welcome to the Legal Nurse Podcast, where you'll get tips to expand your legal nurse consulting skills. Every week, you'll hear from experts from within and outside the legal nurse consulting business. They'll share their knowledge to help you grow. Your show is moderated by Pat Iyer, a legal nurse consultant with over 30 years' experience. So join our community, sit back, relax, and get ready to learn. Here's your host, Pat Iyer.
Welcome to Legal Nurse Podcast. This is Pat Iyer, and I have with me Jean Maroney, who is a professional speaker who I met at the National Speakers Association. And it turns out that we live pretty close to each other in Florida. We've been connecting and seeing each other and maintaining a small group of speakers in the Fort Myers, Naples area. And I've learned to enjoy Jean's unique area of expertise. She runs a business called Thinking Directions. She helps entrepreneurial people, both in and out of corporations, think on their feet. Certainly something that we need to do as legal nurse consultants. Take action and finish sooner so they can achieve their ambitious goals. Ms. Maroney has a master's in psychology and a BS and an MS in electrical engineering from MIT. What we have in common, Jean, is that my son went to MIT and he told me about how every year they do a prank, and the one that he was describing to me in great admiration was when they took a car apart and assembled it on the roof of one of the buildings at MIT.
Yes, putting things on the roof of particularly the dome is one of the favorite MIT pranks. There was a telephone booth put on the dome when I was in school, and it was ringing. There was a phone inside, and it was ringing reputedly.
Oh, wonderful. Just enough to drive the administration crazy, I'm sure.
Yes, mm-hmm.
And Jean has also had graduate training in philosophy from the Ian Rand Institute. So it's quite a combination, psychology, philosophy, and electrical engineering, often not found in the same brain, Jean.
Yeah. That's true. But it's interesting how all three are really relevant for what I do.
Mm-hmm. And she has 10 years' experience in industry as an engineer, program manager, and a software consultant. Her corporate clients include some companies that you've heard of, Microsoft, Amazon, BB&T, Canadian Banknote, and Rogers Communications. And she has taught her methods all over North America, with thousands of people benefiting from her methods. So I'm so pleased, Jean, to be able to bring your unique area of expertise to this group. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Pat. I am very appreciative to be here.
I've talked with Jean about some of the special perspectives of legal nurse consultants and the way that we work. And she's very familiar with the concepts that we handle in terms of taking masses of medical information, analyzing it, synthesizing it, thinking about it, and then being able to communicate it to our clients. So in narrowing this down to what we could reasonably cover in this half an hour show, I wanted to focus, Jean, on one of the dilemmas that affects legal nurse consultants, which is procrastination and perfectionism, which sabotage our success. There's kind of a double-edged sword. The legal world demands precision and accuracy, so one typo could be significant. But the legal world is also not willing to pay for an unending number of hours that are required in order to reach a conclusion and produce an opinion or a work product. So how do we deal with, first of all, that procrastination piece?
Yes, well, as we were talking before, there can be a number of different situations, number of different reasons for why you might be procrastinating. And I think the most important thing to realize if you are if you are procrastinating on jumping into a task, is that is a umbrella term that really doesn't tell you anything except what your behavior is. It does not tell you the cause of why you're procrastinating. And the most important thing you can do at the moment that you notice that you're not doing what you think you ought to be doing is to take an internal read and see, well, what are you feeling right now and what emotions are you experiencing? Because it could be fear. It could be fear that you're not going to get paid for the time that you're going to be putting in. It could be aversion because you're actually, you've been working at this so hard, you're feeling cross-eyed and you just can't stand the thought of putting in another hour right now. It could be guilt because you procrastinated yesterday or you didn't get to it yesterday because of something else, and you know that you're going to have to do it in a rush and that could make you not want to do it. Or it even could be just doubt that you're worried about making it perfect, and any of those negative feelings could cause you to have a reluctance to face the task. But depending on which one it is, it's a completely different solution. So one of the most important things you need to know about procrastination is that the fact that it's procrastination, that identification helps you almost nil. You need to take the additional step to ask yourself, what am I feeling and why do I feel it? It's your feelings about the task, about the reasons why you don't want to do it or you're not doing it, that are actually going to help you problem solve to get you back on track.
You make me think about a conversation that I had with a legal nurse consultant recently. I suggested that she contact attorneys that she had worked for in the past and remind them of her existence, her services, rekindle those relationships. And she was having such difficulty getting started. What do you think is behind that, and how could she tackle what is behind holding her back?
Right. Well, if we asked her, if you said, why, what do you feel when you think about working on that project? My guess is that she would be feeling, you know, perhaps some fear that she doesn't know what to say to them, or some fear that she might be rejected. What do you think, if you could project her psychology, what might she say as to what she would be feeling in that situation?
I think fear is a part of it. It's uncomfortable for many legal nurse consultants to do cold calls. These were actually not cold calls in the sense, the classic sense. They were more warm calls because she had worked for the attorneys in the past.
Mm-hmm.
I think that she's somewhat introverted and shy, and it's hard mm-hmm. for her to come forward and assert herself.
Mm-hmm. And so what you're describing there is a very specific issue, right? So this woman's reason for not making those calls was perhaps that she was feeling shy, she didn't know what to say, and perhaps let's stipulate that it's that. She didn't know what to say, as opposed to she was afraid of being rejected. If it was that she didn't know what to say, then the solution is to come up with a script and to actually work out, well, what would I say? What are the kinds of things I want to say? Maybe practice it so that she could feel comfortable saying it and find out whether, in fact, she's willing to have those words come out of her mouth. Because if the script feels completely unnatural, she's not going to do it in real life. But that's something that you could test. And that would be the solution if that's what the fear is. Now, on the other hand, if it was something else, so maybe if she's afraid of being rejected, the solution would be a different solution. Because you need to deal with the actual obstacle, and it's an emotional obstacle. And unless you deal with the actual cause of the emotions, you're not going to get your motivation aligned so that it's easy to step forward. But if she were afraid, let's actually troubleshoot. Suppose it was that she was actually afraid she'd be rejected. You probably have some standard advice for that, of how to prepare for rejection. I'm curious, do you, Pat?
I do. There was a point in my life before I became a legal nurse consultant when I was involved in a multi-level marketing company And I had a lot of sales training. The product that I was selling was various cleaning solutions. And okay. One of the pieces that stuck in my brain was that every time somebody tells you no, it brings you closer to the next yes.
Because it's a numbers game often, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Right. And so something like that, you know, if what you're afraid of is rejection, there's advice like that you can get. And there are other things too, like, for example, you can do some experimentation in find the one person on the list of people that you're supposed to talk to, say, that you're most comfortable talking to, and see what happens with that person. So take the easiest one, the one where you're least likely to be rejected, or that the person is the friendliest and will give you the friendliest rejection, and you can work your way up to it that way. The point is, there is no one-size-fits-all solution for procrastination except for the first step. And the first step is identify what you're feeling and why you're feeling it, and you will now have, you will now actually start working on the right problem. Because until you know why you're not doing it, you really don't know what problem you need to solve.
And part of what we talked about at the beginning of this segment is procrastination and perfectionism, both mm-hmm. of which can sabotage you. Let's look at the other piece, the perfectionism that infects a lot of people who are functioning in a world where details are exquisitely important. Mm-hmm. And yet, if a nurse tries to perfect and perfect and perfect and perfect a report for an attorney, for example, the hours mount up along with the attorney's resistance to pay for all those hours. So how do you break out of the need to feel that everything has to be perfect?
Well, this is an excellent question also, and I think the most important thing to think about with respect to perfectionism is that you need an objective description of what perfect means. And this is a definition of my husband, who happens to be a philosopher. He says, perfection is flawlessly complete satisfaction of a standard of value. Maybe that's too technical for a podcast, but what it means is you decide what counts as the right standard, and you meet that, and if you meet that, it's good enough. But you set the standard, as opposed to having the idea that perfection means I can't find any way to improve this further. If you don't set an objective test as to whether something is good enough, you fall into the trap of things can always be made better. And there is no end to making things better. I don't care what it is. There is always a way to edit your report so that it's a little bit more essentialized or a little bit clearer. There's always one more pass you can do in reading things. So you can't set the standard of perfection as I can't find a way to make it better, because you can always find a way to make it better. And so it takes up front thinking about what is it that I need to do to make this be a good report. And so, for example, one of the things you mentioned was typos. There's a standard thing in writing where you do multiple passes. The first pass, you basically get the structure right. The second pass, you make sure that points are clear. And the third pass, you edit for little things. And once you believe that the content is right, then you can do a really careful proofing for typos. But at that point, you can't be changing the content, because if you start changing whole sentences, you will introduce new typos, right? So you need to actually, so the idea here is that you'd have a standard for what you would edit on each pass, and you would wait for the last pass to do the fine, I mean, you obviously would fix things as you went if you found them, but you would do this scrutiny on the last pass and perhaps get someone else's eyes to look at it, rather than trying to do everything at once. And rather than having a the idea that you have to get it both, like, say, essentialized at the same time as you're trying to check to make sure that you didn't leave out a not or you didn't misspell a key term or something like that. Did what I say just make sense?
Sure, sure. Could you define for us what essentialized means? Just in
sure.
case that's a term that's unfamiliar to people.
Yes, I slipped that in right in the side there. Well, the idea is that there's always, in any communication, there's always the one main point, and then there are the details. And the essential is the one main point. And you, if you want to communicate effectively, you want to try to focus it down on the one. Now, the one can sometimes be broken down to 3 points. The three can be broken down to more points, but the fewer points you can, sum it up into, the faster you can get it across. And that's what essentializing is. It means boiling it down into the one or the three or the 5 points that you need to get across.
And I think that applies to so many things that legal nurse consultants do, whether it's writing a report or it's writing a blog or it's writing an email. It's really focusing in on getting to the bottom line, which
right.
leads me to the next question is, if we take a step back, we already started with preparing the work product or the report. Let's take a step back and say, now the case has arrived. There's a lot of medical records. Let's say it's a case about a patient who fell from a hospital bed. One of the challenges for legal nurse consultants is determining how to expeditiously and efficiently review that case. Do you have a method for getting to the heart of information?
Yes. So the general process to use here is something I like to call planned evolution, which means that you start with the first version of the results, and then you keep growing to a better and better. Each generation, each pass, you get a better understanding and a better grasp. So what the idea is that you would first need to get an overview. And if you have a case, the first thing you would do is actually look to see, well, what are all the records in the case? Now, you told me offline you would have not just the notes from the nurses who were attending this patient, but you would also have the notes from perhaps the doctor who had treated the patient and other therapists and social services who might have treated them. And so the first thing you need to do is actually get a list of all of that so you see what the territory is that you need to read. Does that? That's probably your first step also, Pat, is that right?
Yes, I firmly believe that you need to put some order into those medical records, whether they are in paper form or they're given to you electronically and you're looking at them in the screen. But you have to have a sense of sections of the chart in order to be able to go to the right section in order to start the review.
Right. So the idea is, the general concept here is that you need to continually get overviews and basically finished with some, in effect, you want to try to work incrementally so that you're getting finishing points rather than just starting at the beginning of, say, 1,000 pieces of paper that you need to work through. If you just work from page 1 to 1,000, when you're on page 428, you just feel in a muddle in the middle of everything, and you don't know where you are, and you won't have any sense of progress. Whereas if you look at this, that maybe 100 pages is a little more realistic. Is that right? 100 page would be a more realistic number?
No, if it's an electronic medical record, it could be in the thousands of pages.
Oh, okay.
Depending on
the 1,000 pages. Right. So it's even more important because it's just completely mind-numbing if you just start at one end and go to the other end. And that is what you can't have. You know, your mind is they're paying you to use your mind to analyze this case. And if you let yourself get overloaded by this data by just going through it linearly from the beginning to the end, you're going to be go numb, and you aren't going to be able to make heads or tails out of it, which is why you need to start at the beginning with just a list, you know, of the, there may be 20 items or pieces in the whole record, or at least you can get it down to 20, because you can put as one item nurse's notes. Now, there are actually 30 days of nurse's notes, but that's not 30. You can put that as one item in your list. A list of 20 things you can look at, and you can put in an order and decide what makes sense to look at first and what makes sense to look at second. And then within, like if you have 30 days of nurse's notes, you can decide which ones are most important. Now, I can cheat because I spoke with you beforehand, and you pointed out that if it was an accident like this, the most important notes are the notes for the from the nurses for the day of the event, so you can see what exactly happened at the time that the person fell off the bed. That's going to give you the eyewitness account, as it were, of what happened, and that's going to orient you to everything else that you want to look at in the record. In fact, you can make a kind of general plan of what order you want to read, but in fact, once you read the notes from the day of the event, that is going to inform you as to what else might be important for the next round of reading that's going to further clarify. So it's actually important that you choose a structure for how you go about this, because at any given time you want to have broken down the task into something that you can do, I would say 2 hours max, and a half an hour is better. You want to have a little mental project that you can do from beginning to end, that you can get your brain around, and that you can sum up in notes for yourself. And that's really what the goal is of structuring the task. And then if you do these by order of importance, so Pat, you and I talked about this before, and it seemed like the order was first get a list of all the documents. From that, probably the nurse's notes from the day of the event are the first thing to read. Then the days leading up to that event, because you want to see what the usual routines were. Then maybe the orders from the physician, and then you suggested maybe the admission. Now, there's probably some other material around. At this point, somewhere along the line, you will actually be able to make an intelligent decision about whether you need to look at things that happen afterwards, things that happen, other therapists that were seeing this client, previous medical records of this client. I assume that sometimes the previous condition is something that's relevant to whether this accident was liable or something like that. But until you basically you make an intelligent decision about what order to do things, and then what you learn as you read them tells you what else is next most important. But if you always do things in order of do the most important first, and then the next most, and the next most, and you keep breaking it down to the things that can be done in a half an hour or 2 hours, every chunk of time that you put in gets you the biggest payoff in understanding and clarity about the problem for the amount of time you put in. And that's really what solves this problem of the tension between quality and time, is that if you make sure that every time you put in another hour, you're putting it in the place where you're going to get the best information to make the best, reach the best or most helpful conclusions, then you and the lawyer who's hiring you have your interests aligned to whether you put in that next hour.
That makes a lot of sense. It sounds like it's akin to peeling off the layers of an onion and getting closer and closer to the heart of the issue as you're looking at the whole picture of what transpired.
Right. And that keeping the whole picture is the most important part, because at any given time, if you just go off on some tangent and dig very deep on one narrow, isolated thing, you can burn a lot of time doing that. And you don't know whether it's going to pay off because you don't have the wider context.
Mm-hmm. Can this apply to other aspects of being in business, such as keeping up with the influx of email?
Definitely. It's the same. The general principle is get an overview and do what's most important first, and do it in layers. And one thing that I recommend with email is, and this is not obviously just me, this is David Allen and other productivity advisors, don't keep all of your email in your inbox. There's sort of, I have like four levels of email, I would say. And there's the stuff that can be handled immediately. There's the stuff that is takes a little bit more time and is important to do quickly. There's the stuff that is part of a routine work that can be that is done in batches. And then there are things that can be deleted, but there are things that I would like to read sometime if I have time. And I have a very structured, there's two processes for doing email. One is just processing what comes in. And what I do when I process it when it comes in, I put it in one of those bins. So everything that comes in, if you can do it immediately, you do it. I mean less than 1 minute. Because it's not worth binning it if it's that little. But everything else gets binned, so things get sent to a SURF account if it's I want to go read it later on. Things get sent to an action account for things that I want to batch up and do. Like I have an administration for my membership program, and so I do those once a day. I do them all together rather than ad hoc because I have to go into six programs. It's a context that I want to set. And things that take a little bit more time, I actually are the only things I leave in my inbox. And so I get my inbox down to, say, three or four things. And then when I have time that day, I batch the thing. I do the work in my inbox, and then I do the work. I do it at prescribed times. But I never have, 1,000 things in my inbox. I always have only a few things that actually need to be done. And I do them in the priority order. I don't know if that was totally clear.
Well, it's clear that the 19,972 emails that I have in my inbox need to be sorted into bins. That's what's clear.
Well, 19,000 is, I hereby give you permission to put everything from before 1 month ago into a 2016 in bin. Or maybe 1 week ago, or maybe 1 day ago. If you are looking at trying to, this is actually an important point. If you do have something that's completely overwhelming, like 19,000 emails that you're not sure quite what to do with, it's very helpful to give yourself a fresh start and then create a process that works. A process, you're never going to get to zero from 19,000. It's just, if it's built up that much, it's not going to happen. But you can put them, as I said, I actually keep, for each year, I have 2015 in, I have 2016 in, I have 2014 in. I have all the, once things are processed, they go to the storage area. And so you could put those in storage and clear it, and then start looking at what do you get in and what is the priority of what it comes in. Now, this would take a little bit of overhead to set up a routine, but once you know what kinds of emails you have and which ones are priority for you to actually deal with and which ones can be put in effect a holding zone, because guaranteed, how many of those 19,000 emails have basically been on hold for more than a week?
Oh, I think there's about 15,000 that have been unread, so that's a different answer to a different question, but
yeah.
Yeah, well, who knows how many have been on hold?
Okay, great. Well, if they're actually unread, do you delete emails that you're not going to read?
Oh, I do. Yeah, that's even 19,000 after I've deleted emails.
Wow. Okay, so then the ones that you haven't read, that sounds like my SURF pile.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say that my SURF pile, there are a lot of emails that I get with links to interesting things that look like they're going to be interesting, and I never go to those links. I just put that email into SURF with the idea that when I have some time to SURF, I will go there and look at it. And I have to confess, very few of them actually get read.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how I manage to stay up to date with the high priority emails that really do need to get read, at least when I don't go on vacation. When I go on vacation, all bets are off.
Mm-hmm. Well, this has been fascinating, Jean. It's been a very fast show today. How can people learn more about you?
Well, I'd love to have you visit my website, which is thinkingdirections.com. That's thinking, T-H-I-N-K-I-N-G, directions, D-I-R-E-C-T-I-O-N-S.com. And there is a freebie on there that you're welcome to. It's called the Smarter Starter Kit. And it includes what I consider to be the number one go-to tactic if you're having any trouble with procrastination or perfectionism, anything like that. It has the best tactic to turn to figure out what is the real problem and how can I problem solve around it. So that's at thinkingdirections.com. It's the Smarter Starter Kit, and it's free. You can see it right there on the first page.
I appreciate your fresh perspective, Jean. This has been Jean Maroney, who has been talking with us about the way that we think and how we can apply that to our legal nurse consulting role in analyzing cases. So thank you so much, Jean, for spending your time with me today.
Thank you for inviting me, Pat. It's been delightful.
And this has been an episode of Legal Nurse Podcast. Please subscribe to our show on iTunes, leave a review, a comment, go to legalnursepodcast.com and share an opportunity to give us some feedback or ask a question, or sign up to receive the transcripts of this show as well as other shows. Thanks so much for joining us.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Check out Pat Iyer's resources for legal nurse consultants on legalnursebusiness.com. Pat coaches legal nurse consultants so they make more money, get more clients, and avoid expensive mistakes. Check out her coaching program at lncacademy.com. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review on iTunes. We always are interested in your ideas for new topics. Please leave a comment on legalnursepodcasts.com. Join our community and get notified of each new episode and receive the transcript of today's program. Complete the request form on legalnursepodcasts.com. We appreciate you and your interest.